quite close. On the road accident benefit scheme bill. But before we do that, we received a minority view from Honorable Humsinga. Should I say the DA?
Indeed, Chair, it is a minority report. If you would allow me to introduce the report.
Okay, I'm going to give you like 10, 12 minutes to speak to the report, and then we can be able to have a way forward.
Thank you, Chair.
After you have done that, Honorable Ramatlakane also has got other matters to talk to, which I believe we should be able to look into before we go into the clause by clause. On that note, Honorable Members, you are heartily welcome. Honorable De Freitas, you are still an honorable member. On my left, that is where you are supposed to sit. Yeah, if you can just shift and let's add a chair. You must always remember that it's us and them. Let's have an additional chair for Akbar Eliede. Honorable Humsinga, if you can start with your report.
Thank you, Chair, and indeed, thank you for allowing me to talk about this before we go through the clause by clause. But I, in terms of flow of process, I think it would be good that we raise the objections before we go through clause by clause, because I would suspect that you want a particular flow working through the bill instead of being stopped every time for all the objections rather than to have a flow at a particular point. So therefore, I really thank you for allowing us then this opportunity to just raise our concerns in terms of the RABS bill in its current form. I would then want to table the 19-page document, if you would allow that at the end, Chair. But in summary, I just want to refer to a couple of pointers. In terms of the RABS bill in its current state, it is no secret that the DA has always maintained a position of seeing the RABS bill as a solution, but not the solution, and that there are a lot of other options, especially in terms of our point of departure, which is one in looking at amendments of the current Road Accident Fund Act rather than to replace it with a whole new RABS bill, particularly because we have concerns around the financial elements in financing a dual system based on the vested interest which someone maintains in still lodging RAF claims, which still has to be financed parallel to this new RABS bill. So in summary, Chair, there's a myriad of issues contained in the RABS bill which can be made out in terms of constitutionality. There are core financial questions around affordability and sustainability which remain unanswered. There is an essential need or essential needs in the healthcare services which the RABS bill is highly dependent upon is not addressed. In the fourth instance, operational service delivery execution and related costs, especially with regards to the needs in rural areas, are outstanding. And then in the fifth instance, prerequisites to conclude a full understanding of the implications of RABS have yet to be finalized. And I'm referring there to insight into the regulations, which is still outstanding, also the tariffs. Particularly of the private sector, which we understand have not been negotiated or settled yet, and then also several MOUs in terms of getting the whole package ready for implementation of the RABS bill. So if you would allow me in the last 11 and a half minutes then to just point out a couple of issues in terms of constitutionality, which I've raised as part of the introduction. We've got an issue with the rationality, equality, illegal earnings, referencing in terms of other schemes, dispute resolution remedies, then also in terms of human dignity, referring to Section 10, choice of medical practitioners, no medical costs, abolishment of general damage, damages, bodily integrity, deprivation of property, healthcare and social security, access to courts, then tariffs, and also the tagging, which we believe should have been different. Those are bullet points which has all been discussed in a fair amount of detail. Then we've also looked at how the process went about, and I've also then included the statistics which I personally took down from the 9 sessions that we had, 10 were the one that we had to repeat in Worcester. Then also, in principle, we find it very frustrating from the moment where the motion of desirability was accepted on the 6th of June, where two elements, in fact, no fault and the removal of common law, were then were then accepted as principles, which then guided the whole further process, and that in a limiting extent, in that all further submissions was then exclusive of the wide scope of options, in that these two elements were then accepted on the 6th of June already. So I've then also stated in point number 2 our position around no fault and common law, and then a whole chapter 4 on the financial aspects, and in particular then around the uncertainty around the modeling, also making the point that subsequent to the only report of financial nature which was submitted by True South as actuarial calculations, which was based on a lot of assumptions which are questionable, apart from that and apart from the modeling, which still is very arguable in terms of all the assumptions that was used to argue the point that there would be a 20% saving. A lot of changes was made, and in particular changes relating to definitions that has a direct implication on the calculation of benefits, which we then argue another actuarial calculation should be considered. Hence my suggestion then for a workshop on the financials, just to then get clarity on what the exact cost of RABS would be. Then to just conclude, Chair, apart from financials, which is handled in Chapter 4, I've then concluded, just in summary, in acknowledging the fact that we need to look at the Road Accident Fund. We do acknowledge the huge needs, the financial constraints that we have in the in the Road Accident Fund, and then suggest that many of the solutions could be attained by amendment of the current Road Accident Fund, rather than to try and invent something new, since a lot of the issues in the Road Accident Fund in its current form relates to administration and financial disciplinary matters, rather than to have a whole new set of legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Humsinga. The view is tabled. Honourable Ramatlakana, you also had other matter to deal with. Honourable Mpanza, you want to speak to the view? It's the view of the party. We will table it in Parliament as this view. We don't even need to qualify it with the responses, honourable members. Honourable Ramatlakana, there were issues that you raised.
I read the issues, Chair, but I'm a bit constrained with what we've just said, because we don't have a report or minority report.
What council members, and we have hard copies here.
If it constitutes the minority report as a report together with a committee report, I think we need to just to find out the status of it and how we deal with that status, because then we clear whether we, because there will be a number of issues that we would have dealt with in the committee, broad committee, that are picked up in that report. I hear you, Chair, and I don't want to say you are directing us the right way, but just that we need to be clear about it, because it's my reading or my listening to it, it almost constitute a complete report that has a different outcome of it. So I'm just wanting to check that. That's why I was hesitant, because I had a different issue that I needed to raise. But the question is how we that's just if you can help us, Chair, on that, because if the Honorable Home Singer is the position that they are presenting, because the minority report, or in the report as is, when a report is written, is a minority report constitutes an objection, and the reason for objection, but it's not a thesis, basically, that constitute that minority report. So that's all. That's why I'm raising it, Chair, that we are very clear as we enter into it, because if this becomes an extra report for the committee, it has a huge implication for the committee, which I don't think I would be inclined to agree with it, because the reason that I've enumerated here, they've got huge implication if we were to accept that report as part of the report.
No, I think you need to pause, because there are some hands which actually have been raised. Let me indicate that, honorable members, I felt that this report should be tabled first before we go into clause by clause, so that we don't need to waste time. That clause one, the report is brought in and as an objection. So basically, I felt that that was the approach. But I'm happy that honourable members are raising issues. Before I can allow honourable Mpanza and honourable Sibande to speak, secretary of the committee would like to say something.
Chair, this is not a minority report. These are minority views that's allowed in terms of the NA rules. So the DAs was basically within its right to submit the report, and there's no limitation on the length. I can even say that some objections in other committees, especially finance, would be 100 pages. I just need to give the committee an idea what would a report on a bill be like. Members would have had the reports in the past on both where there were no objections. So the report would read that the bill was referred to the committee in terms of JTM NA rules. It will state the rule, and it will say that the committee reports on the bill with amendments. And then the committee will, the what would be published then in the ATC would be the long list of amendments. If it's 20 pages, if it's 20, if it's 100, it's 100. When there's an objection, the report will read differently. It will say the committee reports on the bill with amendments, which in this case would be Bill 17A of 2017. And then the report will say there were objections. If there were only certain clauses, the report would say there were no consensus in terms of the following clauses. It will outline the clauses. In this instance, there was objections against the bill. So then it will further read the DA, these are the parties, or these are the parties that objecting, and it will give the reasons. So, as I'm just saying, they will, it's minority view, so it won't be a separate report. It will, the amendment itself, it's a lot of pages. So the report will be shorter than the actual amendments, but those views have to be reflected in the report, because that will be the information that will be available to the other parties and the members when the debates happen. They will see there was no consensus when the bill was adopted by the committee.
Okay, Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Sibande.
Yeah, Chair, I'm not going to waste the committee's time. To me, I think I'm worried about the process issue. But as she has just explained, I would just say we note the objection. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sibande.
Chairperson, I'll also join my colleague that the taking of this proposal from the DA, I mean, when we capture it in terms of records, it must certainly indicate that is as if they represent the majority of the minorities. It must be specific that that is a DA position, because we had a lot of minority parties participating. I wanted to clarify that in terms of capturing. It must be clear that it is a DA position. So I don't have any problem, as it was explained. But that is my key concern, because it's sometimes, you know, when you participate at the end, you have such proposal, that is something else.
Honorable Ramatlakan.
No, Chair, I hear the explanation from the Secretary. Because the explanation, and I'm not necessarily saying the DA doesn't have the right, but I'm saying their report, the objection is a DA objection. Now, if it's the DA objection, I'm saying the things that they're objecting to today is the things that we have dealt with before throughout the process. Because if they are raised here, there is also alternative view. And that alternative view is a committee's view. Those that they must, all I'm saying, Chair, maybe I'm taking long, all I'm saying is that there must be, all the issues raised here are disputed. The whole thing about constitutionality and all of that,
common
law issues, are disputed. The point I'm trying to make is that it must be clear that in the committee report, the body of the report, that all of these things were canvassed, all of them. It's a view that that comes at the tail end of the process, and I think it's fine that it is presented. But we need to say in the report, anyway, we're going to write the report ourselves, it's going to be our report, and all of these issues, because I can just see where this is going. So I think let's walk with our eyes open on it, and I want to just leave it there. Can I now raise my issue?
Yeah. Let me just indicate that we are all aware that this is a building towards the Constitutional Court issues that they have always been talking to. It's not a secret, we are aware. These are part of the building blocks. We accept, and we will cross that bridge when we arrive at it. It doesn't need to give us the heartaches and headaches. You can continue with your issue.
No, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Mine is a fairly small issue, which is not being responded to, or was not responded to. I was trying to look at there were certain things that we suggested during the discussion one of them that, in fact, I followed up with an email. There was an email that I wrote asking the very same questions that the legal people as well as the department should respond to. One of it, if you remember, there was a discussion about when does the old disappear and the new emerge. And at that point, there was a 2030 discussion that in 10 years we needed to have, because in the clause, in terms of sexual commission, one of the things that it raises is that becomes the center of the bill, is that we must move away from the current system to a new system which must be part of the social security system. That's why the age of 60 becomes critical, because people then take up their pension in a different way. Now, we asked the question, and the question was, when we need to have a transitional clause, I think there was a word, transitional clause, that gives the indication that, because these assumptions, that this is going to be part of that. At the moment, it's not part of that. There's no process that takes us to that integrated social security system. So we then said there should be a clause, which is a transitional clause, that would enable the Department of Social Development to actually deal with this issue, because this issue about that coming up with that bill is their responsibility. That was one. The second issue that was raised in that email, there was a whole discussion that the department explained that the issue of the deficit of 200 billion and the people that are in the system and the bond or promissory note that have been given to people, the letter of commitment that they're going to be paid once the money becomes available, is what will make it impossible that you can determine whether in 2030 you'll be able to repeal the current RAF bill. That it was a second issue. I think there were questions that I posed, and because the one issue that was raised as a difficulty was this 200 billion, that it is a problem of a deficit. I asked in the email that I sent, and that was long ago, so how do we know that the government, given that this is a bill of government, is not going to be able to find the 200 billion to sort out this issue and drive the legislation, the bill, so that we have one system, not two systems? Much as you have one, in fact, you have people that are long-term liability in the system, but you have one piece of legislation. In other words, you say, you predetermine that in this 12 or 13 or 14 years, we will repeal this act, because this act will be in a full steam. If it is not, government will have to find money to deal with the deficit of that, so that you are able to get into the new system. That was contained in this email that I sent to the committee secretary, and then I was informed it was then channeled to the department for the department to respond to that, and the legal eagle to respond to it. Now, I thought, Chair, before we get into the discussion or clause by clause, I should pose the question: what happened to that those questions? Can they still be answered, or will they not be answered? Or is there at least an alternative explanation about that?
Please. Chair, sorry, I'm at a disadvantage. I never received the email. I remember that this was a discussion that we've had at the committee, but I've not subsequently to that received the email. I can speak to some of it again if it need be. If I'm allowed to, or not. Can I go?
Chairperson, may I respect also concern that I've never received that email.
how do we now deal with the issues as raised? Because it was a follow-up of the meeting in 454.
I vividly recall some of this, the issues raised by Honourable Member being responded to by my colleague, Mr. Vellemse. I remember that in one of the sessions that we held, Chairperson.
On the 13th of September, just before we broke for recess, that matter was raised, but Mr. Ramaphosa is saying it was not, they still had some outstanding matters. It wasn't exhausted.
Okay. Mr. Vellemse, can you respond to some of the issues that the Honourable Member has raised before we go into the clause by clause?
Chair, yes, I can speak to those issues again. So, under the current dispensation, if you're a road crash victim, your rights vest in terms of the law as it stands today. So in law, you then have certain rights that vest because of the current system that's in place. There's a presumption that the legislature would never, and this is pre-constitutional case law, there's a presumption that the legislature would never go back and tinker with vested rights. Subsequently, you now have a constitutional dispensation where there's a right of equality in Section 9. So you wouldn't go back and remove, for instance, a right to general damages which had vested already under the current dispensation. So that's the issue here. What the RAFS bill does do is, as of the date of it coming into effect, it changes the law and your rights as a road crash victim then in terms of the new dispensation. So from that point onwards, all road crash victims that had accrued rights in terms of the Road Accident Fund Act retain those rights. They're not removed. And they can exercise them for as long as they're able to. So there is prescription that runs against those claims. They've got a certain period within which to lodge the claims, and if they don't, they prescribe under the current legislation, the RAF Act. All new claimants then get their rights in terms of a new framework that then took effect whenever the new RAFS bill comes into effect. So that gives them their rights that vest, and it differs from claimants that were involved in accidents the day before. So up until 12 o'clock of the evening before the day on which this bill comes into effect, all those claimants obtain or get vested rights in terms of the current Road Accident Fund legislation, which you cannot, from a constitutional point of view, go and remove retrospectively. It will create a constitutional issue. Then all claimants that we settle claims currently on the basis of paying future medical expenses on the basis of an undertaking. So we do not pay, under a common law claim, it's possible to quantify a claim for future loss of medical expenses and pay a lump sum. But the Act allows us not to do that because we can also not afford that. So what we do is we issue an undertaking, which is similar to a contract. And we give the claimant an undertaking that for as long as he requires future medical treatment, as and when that requirement arises, we'll pay at that point in time. So those undertakings as well are vested rights that need to be honored into the future. So if you remove the current dispensation, if you retrospectively go and rescind or take away the current Road Accident Fund Act, what you then have is you'll have claims that arose prior to the RAFS Act taking effect, and those claims would then be managed on a pure common law basis. So you would pursue the wrongdoer for damages, and the employer of the wrongdoer, and where the employer is the state or a company, the vicarious liability principle would apply, and those claims would be uncapped. So you would have Schorsch-type claims again. Foreigners would recover R500 million from the wrongdoer, the insurers or employers. So even the current Road Accident Fund Act contains a transitional provision section that provides for claims under the Multilateral Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, the scheme that existed prior to it having come into effect, to be managed by the RAF. So a similar situation would then persist under RAPS, so that all claims that arose up to a certain point in time is finalized under the legislation and dispensation that existed, and all new claims then are managed in terms of this. So at some point in time, those claims would come to an end. No new claims would arise. And as they get financed through the system and as people die, that liability comes to an end.
but you cannot extinguish it through an act because that affects vested rights.
Honorable Ramatlakane, there we are. Do you want it in writing, the request, or can you resend the email for... Can you send it to the committee secretary? Do you have? Can we reroute it to the department?
Yes, no, I think we have to reroute it to the department. Oh, yeah, no.
You can reroute it to the department. I think it was written on the 9th of September. So it's a long time ago. But we can reroute it to the, because it didn't only make that point. There are other points that was contained in the email, including the point I was making about the social security system, what we do about it. And I also said in that email, obviously there are provisions in the current act that are going to be, as a result of this, that are repealable. I ask in the email, which are those sections that are repealable, that you can then list as the repealable one. They're all contained in the same email. But, Chair, maybe in the interest of time, it's not going to be helpful for me to raise this issue and you don't know what I'm talking about. And then I don't know what went wrong with this email. Valerie, what went wrong to it? Because I had expected to get an answer long before even the recess so that we can digest it. I'm surprised that everybody's disowning that this thing has ever arrived.
Let's reroute the email, and as we'll be dealing with clause by clause, we can see how we were able to deal with that, if you so agree, Honorable Ramatlakane, and then we go into the clause by clause. Honorable members, I'm going to be taking you through the clauses, and I want to hear a yes and a nay on the clauses. Okay, question of clarity.
I just have a question of clarity. Mr. Ramatlakane wants a response from the department. Mm-hmm. I need to know if there's even a shred of possibility that the response might influence the clause-by-clause process. Is there any uncertainty? Then I would advise the committee to rather deal with that matter because the clause-by-clause is a formal voting process. So... I would advise rather than delayed until that matter has been addressed because I don't foresee the committee coming back to it once the formal voting starts.
Okay. Honorable Ramatlakane has raised, I think, I caught up with something like three critical issues. The one issue is how do we factor in the social security aspect, when do we make sure that it gets elevated, because we in the object of the bill it says that it will deal with the social security aspects. The other matter that he has highlighted is
the implication, there will be implication, yeah. And then we explain maybe where the implication will happen. I see these things for me as part of the end of the bill, probably the transitional arrangement that we can bring in. Because for an example, in the email, I then suggested that if we can say a transitional clause or one clause, I don't know what you call it, that says that in the intervening period, the social development has a responsibility to basically come up with this comprehensive piece of legislation that deals with a comprehensive security network. That is what we're referring to, that this, the reason we're coming with this law is because we are saying it's going to be part of the security network, system, actually. So that Department of, the implication is later on the special transitional period that deals with that. And that deals, probably is going, there will be on that. But on the, and the second one can also go at the back of the bill. Because if I were to accept your argument that you are the liability and stuff like that, so we can say that as soon as this liability has been disposed of, that is the time on which you repeal that particular act. You can make a provision in the act like that. Now, it may be 10 years, maybe 15, maybe 20 years. Maybe, I don't know, what, 100 years. Maybe 30, maybe 25 years. At that point, that the then repeal the old act.
Can I respond? There's certainly not a problem in including in the transitional provisions a clause that states that once all liability under the Road Accident Fund Act has been extinguished, the Road Accident Fund Act must be repealed. There's no problem. That there's no issue there. As long as that doesn't affect the vested rights, it's fine. Yeah. And just in terms of the further point, in terms of the repeal of existing provisions, there's a Schedule 2 to the bill, which deals with the list of legislation and in the current Road Accident Fund Act, the sections that are being repealed. So that's already in the bill.
Can we now proceed with the... Well, how do I proceed?
We can proceed, Chair, because we will agree that we will have a transitional clause at the back of the bill. It's not going to affect the earlier part of the bill where we're dealing with clause by clause. In that case, it can be drafted, it can be presented, and then we proceed with it when we get to it.
The reason why I'm asking how do I proceed, the social security aspects, how can we deal with that? Mrs. Patsiri, you wanted to say something? Switch on the mic.
Chairperson, I'm just thinking aloud here. Wouldn't that be a policy issue in terms of the suggestion that's been made with regard to development of the kind of bill? And shouldn't that be coming from social development? I'm not so sure.
Okay. From the angle where the honorable member is coming through, he says part of the object of the bill is talking to social security aspect, but there's not a single clause which is talking to social security issues. So not unless I didn't hear him correctly.
Can I maybe just give input there? It's even in the courts, even the Constitutional Court refers to the Road Accident Fund, the current scheme, as part of the social security network in the country already. It's viewed as that. And nowhere in the RAF Act do you find any reference to social security. But from a legal perspective, it's viewed as a component of the broader social security framework in the country. So RAFs, this bill just continues, and it's a big move closer to social security principles in that we're leaving fault behind. So it's already there. It's already, considering that RAF, the Road Accident Fund, and the current dispensation is already part of the social security scheme, without reference to that in the bill. Nothing changes in terms of RAFs except that this is much closer to those principles in terms of what the bill provides for. No fault defined benefits paid on an incremental basis. That's social security.
Thank you. Can we now go into the business? Oh, okay. Honorable Ramachandra.
I'm trying to follow up what is Mr. Williamson now saying in this case. because my point is that the there is already, we all know that already the whole issue about the security system of the country has been under a lot of discussion and refinery, including the whole kind of commissions, labor, what happened to the UIF, all kinds of things, contribution by employer to that in order to get all of that, which spills the broader security system of the country. But at the moment, it's not integrated into any legislation. My point was and remains this, that one of the recommendations from Social Commission was this thing, it must move towards the social security system. This is one debate about what we are talking about. It did not say it's part of it. There was no, it's not in the commission, in that recommendation, it's not, it didn't say it's part of it. It said it is going, it must move towards a broader social security. Hence, you now have this 59 years of age that people are now beginning to move into their social security. So the question I'm asking is, and I know that the Mokgatlo says it's a policy issue, and I'm saying that in this act, we should have a provision at the back of the bill that says there will be this integrated legislation that will deal with all the this, because this is part of it. How does it get there without us expressing a view on it? And when we are making a law here, which must have some, we must at least have certainty where we're going with it. So I'm not even thinking that we are encroaching on the functional of the social development here. All I'm saying, you're arguing that point. It's part of the security network. Why can't we say it in the bill? If already we begin to say it's not written anywhere, but the court made the determination that it is. So why can't we write it as a transitional period? So the social development, that's why I was saying, what I exactly saying about social development clause in the bill. Do you have a problem with that? I don't have a problem with it.
Before they respond, let me say, can I implore on all the legal state law advisors and every other person, including the department, 5 minutes break, go and discuss and come back with a concise answer. Thank you very much. Have you settled yourself before I chase you away completely for the rest of the day?
Yes, we did, Chairperson.
How have you resolved? Yes.
We are proposing a
laws that probably could be added, and we'll just simply. Nolutan, will you read that clause? And then on the other question, we maintain that some of it, or part of our answer, is that this is a policy.
Makhatu, don't speak in parables. On the other two, which ones? Because
there was
an
issue of
issues.
A development of a legislation around
exactly that's
on
what
social
we want
development
to hear.
Issues. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the uninformed response when I earlier on I said it's a policy decision, and I'm still of the view that indeed it is, because there would have to be consultations with the Social Security Cluster Departments leading up to development of that legislation. So I'm not so sure whether this is something that one can put a timeline on and say by this time this needs to be in place, Chairperson.
Are you purporting that it will be wrong if the committee puts something to the effect that there will be a need that consultation with all the other necessary department or the social security cluster, that there's a need for legislation which will be able to, if we write it like that, will it be wrong?
I'm inclined to say, Chairperson, with due respect, that probably what we can do, what the provision that we can have, stepping away from responding to this question now, is that we can insert a provision saying upon extinction of the liabilities of the RAF, right, but then without setting a timeline, that it will cease to exist. That's the example. But then, on going back to that one, I would, in my uninformed view, Chairperson, with due respect, say that probably this is something outside of the purview of this committee.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Members. Can we proceed with clause by clause? Honourable Mpanza, Honourable Ramatlakana, Honourable Mpanza, let me start with you.
Chair, I don't want to agree on something that I don't understand. I didn't understand.
You don't want to agree on the uninformed decision by the advocate.
Yes.
Okay. Honorable Ramatlaka.
No, Chair.
I'll come to the proposal. Yeah.
No, Chair, I think on the first one that is explicit, that I think it was said before the caucus by Chris, I think we can settle on that. We can make a clause like that distinguish once they've been exhausted. I think we can live with that. On the other issue, you did say that they are already at the back, there are already provisions that are cited.
Mm-hmm.
We can settle with that. The only one that has not yet been settled is the one about the policy and consultation. I had a look at the memorandum on the bill, and I noticed that on consultation, you did make a point that all this department that we are talking about, they were consulted. They understand clearly where you are going with this particular bill. The whole thing, the principle, where we're going to. You now are a bit doubtful about that consultation, or you're arguing that you need a new consultation. For me,
I don't have a problem for you to have that consultation if you take the view like that. Remember that this bill is no longer yours. You are advising us, but this bill is a committee bill at this stage. So we can say that given this, you can put a clause that gives a direction, but which is a clause that is not necessarily instructive, that says all of these, it requires this speedy integration or process of integrating this into one, and that has to be looked into. We can put a clause like, can find a wording to put it like that, so that it gives a direction that we are alive to the situation about what has been the case, why is this bill or before us at the moment. So I think we can find a way that is not, I see your point about you don't want to commit anybody as if you are committing anybody. We are committing someone that as a legislator we can see that there's a need for this kind of integration. There will be necessary for the policy to be, or the legislation to be able to address this particular question. When that happens, it's a matter that the executive will deal with when they deal with it, or even a private members bill can emerge that brings all of these together. So all I'm saying, I'm trying to give you a comfort so that you can think about the wording. A kind of a loose wording that can be in a transitional area that is helping everybody to move towards that particular issue without necessarily giving them instruction. Is it difficult to do? I don't think so.
While Advocate Makado is conferring, Nolitando, would you want to read the proposed clause?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the clause is not yet finalized. It's something along the lines of what Makhato was saying. Currently, it's something like once the liability of the RAF is extinguished, the RAF, the claims that arose in terms of the RAF Act, cease to exist. It's something along those lines, and already in the transitional provision in section in clause 71 2A, it already says the Road Accident Fund Act continues to apply to all claims where the cause of action arose prior to the commencement of the act. So with that kind of combined with what I just read now, or kind of deals with the concerns raised by Honorable Ramatlakane. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, in view of this new clause, in view of the new additional amendments that will be there, I'm thinking out loud. Do we still have to proceed with the clause by clause, or can we do the clause by clause tomorrow? Honorable Sibande, Honorable Umsinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Correctly, on what we have observed, I will propose that we continue tomorrow. And then secondly, I wanted to comment with something. You see, colleagues who are from the different political parties, we ought to be careful sometimes not to mix some of our own inputs. There is a quite different between an ordinary, a reality, if we're talking about the Constitution, the things which are supposed to happen to the people, and our own personal view, which is political, of which that can change at any time, while there is also different between short-term and long-term. we must view it in a way that we're not representing our jackets here, but we're representing the very same people where we are coming from, no matter from which political party. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Humsinga, I thought your hand was up. Okay.
Chair, I would then support my colleague in suggesting that we wait for the submission of the actual draft of text of the suggested legislation and postpone today's meeting in the clause by clause that was considered.
Oh, okay. The proposal has been seconded that we get the amendment as proposed by honorable members, and then we will continue as scheduled for tomorrow. When we start, we will start with the clause that has been proposed, and then we will go clause by clause. We will be in this very room, I know. We definitely will be in this very room.
Okay. In terms of process, Chair, the deliberation stage is the stage where the clauses are being crafted, basically. Tomorrow is the formal stage, so it would not be advisable to still tomorrow go into wording. So what might happen tomorrow is there might be a word or two that the committee is not happy with. So I would advise, Chair, the committee has time to do it today. Time has been given for the committee to meet on the bill to finalize the wording of the clause today so that I can, the House only starts at 3 o'clock, Chair, and the Chief Whip and the House Chair has been informed at the committee's meeting, so they've agreed to time needed. So if that, I would advise the committee to craft that clause today because it might impact on cross-referencing, and I also want to get the proofs from CREDA today so that I can send it to members tonight, if it's possible. Please.
Chairperson, will do that now.
He's all